I ran across a book the other day with the title Anandamayi-ma's Philosophy of Absolute Cognition. And I had to laugh because Anandamayi-ma was totally beyond philosophy. Absolute cognition means exactly that there cannot be a philosophy of it. Because any philosophy, by definition, is not absolute. It involves assumptions. It creates a set of parameters and conditions which eliminates the absoluteness. It creates boundaries. This is what every ego does. It creates a set of assumptions. It suppresses the fact of those assumptions so that the assumptions seem to be reality, and then it is totally frustrated by the reality that it's trapped in and needs to do something to improve the situation. We've got to get better. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. And it's all because you've created an illusory box that's a reality tunnel that is totally delusional. But then you externalize it and blame your frustration on conditions within a world that you have now projected to be outside yourself. And so the ego thus gives itself a meaning and a purpose and an ideal, and thus creates a situation in which it believes that it must continue with that set of assumptions in order to be able to reach a state that it projects into the future in which it will be free of them. But that state can never be arrived at because the assumptions follow you as your own shadow. And it's only when the shadow has been eliminated, the shadow that is caused by the first assumption, which is the I thought, and only when that has been transcended and all boxes removed, all parameters, all event horizons, all sets and subsets of belief systems that create the unreality which you are trying to then escape, only then will the realization of the self return to consciousness. But that absolute cognition is there always. It's the default position of consciousness prior to the making of any assumptions. And prior to the distribution of states of consciousness in a temporal or linear sequence. In other words, for example, the three avastas, waking, dream, and sleep. Most people, once they have created the assumption of the I thought knotted to the body identification, only experience those avastas one at a time. So many people fall asleep here in meditation, but then they are no longer awake, or they're in a state of dream, but they are not able to recognize the basis of that dream within the avastha of deep sleep that is then interpreted by the waking mind. It's the integration of all the three avasthas from a place that's beyond all of those in the absolute cognition, the turiya state, that enables the eternal reality that is truth, that is satchitananda, to emerge. And that's when there is bliss rather than either euphoria or suffering. Because one can have certain assumptions in which there is no lack and one's mission is to take advantage of all the opportunities of Maya versus the one in which one is suffering from all the lack that Maya is creating for one. But in either case, whether with a positive or a negative ego outlook, one is trapped within a box that sooner or later will run into a karmic wall. So Ramana says in number 75, you speak of a vision of Lord Shiva. Vision is always of an object. That implies the existence of a subject. The value of the vision is the same as that of the seer. That is to say, the nature of the vision is on the same plane as that of the seer. Appearance implies disappearance also. Whatever appears must also disappear. A vision can never be eternal, but Lord Shiva is eternal. So, whatever vision that you might have of whatever God projection, whether you have a vision of Christ or Buddha or Lord Shiva or Ram or Krishna or the goddess in any of her forms, all of those are simply projections of the self that you can no longer access because you've put yourself in a box in which that vision is always beyond. And so it will disappear. And it disappears because you have disappeared to the self that you are and put it into a projected mode of separation through the assumption that you are limited in time and space and in an identification with the material vehicle. So we're not seeking to have visions. We're seeking to be that which can never be fully envisioned or conceptualized or grasped as an ideal. It is that absolute cognition that cannot be philosophized, that cannot be put into any formula or any intelligible mode of analyzing a reality that it places within a dual construct of subject and object, in which the subject tries to grasp and master the object, or the object appears to laugh at the subject for its failure to recognize its own God consciousness. The sense of humor of the self can appear both as tragedy and comedy, and usually simultaneously as both. But the absolute cognition is beyond all of those modes of perception that are there only for the entertainment of the consciousness that has fallen from the absolute, the infinite, into the finite. And it can't recognize that it's in the finite because the finite itself is infinite, but it's a bad infinity. In the same way that in a millimeter, there's an infinite number of points. There's also an infinite number of points in a meter, which is a slightly larger infinity. So the ego is an infinity, but as the mathematicians would say, it's a very bad infinity, in which you're going to end up repeating the same modes of experience in slightly different forms over and over again because of the smallness of the information database that is contained within that and the nature of the assumptions that are made that require a repetition of the same kind of experiences to mark the signature of the identity of that particular subset of experience with which one is identified. So, the vision implies the seer. The seer cannot deny the existence of the self. There is no moment when the self as consciousness does not exist, nor can the seer remain apart from consciousness. This consciousness is the eternal being and the only being. The seer cannot see himself or herself. Does he deny his existence because he cannot see himself with the eyes as pratyaksha in vision? No. So pratyaksha does not mean seeing, but being. So because of the desire to see oneself in a mirror, one remains in the mirror stage. And then because one doesn't like what one sees in the mirror, one requires visions of different things in the mirror and of objects of desire that one can gaze at and be mirrored back by that give you a different image with slightly different assumptions about yourself that can shift the type of suffering that you're experiencing. and create moments of euphoria in which the suffering is transcended, but only moments, because whatever appears as an object must disappear, and one is then linked within this carrot and stick modality of experience in which one is doomed to a linear succession of modes of suffering and of limitation of even the possibility to imagine liberation. Because the assumptions that have been made that have created your sense of being a someone in a world is the very cage within which you cannot escape, because to escape it requires you to abandon your own identity. And it is only this self-abandonment that results in the recovery of the absolute cognition that is the self, that cannot be visualized, conceptualized, or known in any way except through the being that you are, when all thought, all imagery, all modes of impulse and imagination have been released, and the return to the self that is uncreated and that is beyond cognition becomes an emergent property of one's capacity to accede to that which is immanent within oneself, as well as transcendent of that which one believes oneself to be. And the merger of the immanent and the transcendent result once more in the realization of the absolute as the only reality. May you achieve the grace of peace by avoiding the temptations of making any assumptions or falling into the temptation of philosophy or even the temptation to exist. And may you not fall into the false assumption that Ananda Mayima was a woman who existed in a world and professed certain philosophic ideas, or that Ramana was a renunciate who lived on a mountain in South India, or any such assumptions about the nature of consciousness as being divided among a multiplicity of beings. For all of those assumptions are the fountainhead of delusion and suffering. And may you know the deeper peace of the uncreated self beyond all possible assumptions, that recognizes the real that can neither be assumed nor denied, and that comes into total union with that which neither appears nor disappears, and realize your eternal presence and absence, being and non-being, as the absolute paradoxical whole that transcends immanence and transcendence, and yet is immanent in both, as that absolute that cannot be expressed logically because it transcends all modes of thought and all modes of logos that could be devised by an intelligence that functions within any linguistic matrix, because the absolute cannot be composed as either a world or a structure of logic in which worlds are created, but is that intelligence which is always so absolute that it can only be surrendered to in the realization of the absolute bliss of the self that you are. Here and now. Namaste.
Namaste.